So what I wanted to talk about this evening was corruption, the corruption of the mind. How does the mind become corrupted? Might think of that as a strong word, but I don't think that's necessarily the case. The Buddha, when he surveyed the world and looked at the human race and looked at how people live and what makes them tick and all of that stuff, he basically realized there was two ways to go about life. There's two basic strategies that we see. One is what he calls perpetual wandering, which is just kind of autopilot, roaming through your day, roaming through life, trying to accumulate as much pleasure as possible and to avoid pain and to try to get what you want at all costs and avoid what you don't want and just kind of let your system do what it wants to do. That's one way to go about it. Many of us have seen and learned that that doesn't work so well for us. And the other way is to cultivate mindfulness, and the other way is to cultivate an awareness and a way of life, a way of actions and behaviors and speech that are very much set in the direction of being free and liberated from suffering. And so that there's really an intentional way of living, or there's just kind of an automatic. Do what feels good, try to avoid pain, hope it works out in the end, kind of going through life. So this is the strategies that we can look at. It's pretty simple to see this. But what happens is, as human beings, we're extremely vulnerable and we're highly corrupted by what he calls the forces of greed, hatred, and delusion. And also, we don't have to be a rocket science or a Zen master or a long-term meditator to look at the world stage and to look at the way the human race and the way that things have gone and the way that things are going to notice that greed is doing very well. As a force of mind, as a force of human desire, greed is kicking ass. Greed is doing very well. A lot of greed. In the human world. Definitely lots of hatred. Hatred is being well nourished in the human world. And also confusion or delusion. A lot of confusion going on. And so that just being born into this human form, we are highly susceptible to these forces. Greed, hatred, and delusion. And it's nothing we can do about it. It's not our fault. It's not good or bad or moral or unmoral. Or these kind of ideas are really problematic. But we just want to acknowledge that we easily fall prey and that our consciousness is often colored by one of these three forces. So maybe greed, hatred, and delusion are strong words, but when we unpack them, it's greed is wanting, reaching for, taking, anticipating. Hatred is aversion, trying to get rid of, not liking. And oftentimes the confusion plays out is the delusion that we think if we could just have more pleasure, we'd be happy. If we could just get rid of all the pain, emotional pain, physical pain, mental pain, we'd somehow be happy. But we probably know that that's not even realistic, really. That's usually how, you know, what we see nowadays is that's what addiction's all about, isn't it? Avoiding discomfort and accumulating pleasantness. I don't know anybody who's succeeded with that strategy for a long term, maybe in the short term, maybe for tonight. For 6 hours. And so this is where Buddhism and Dharma practice since it's been translated into many different languages, and now that we find it here in the West or in America, this is where there's a lot of confusion if you read books on Buddhism. And what I really want to talk about this evening is the difference between desire and the difference between desire and craving, or reactivity. And so oftentimes, if you read a book on Buddhism or you start listening to Buddhist teachers and you become interested, one of the things that happens is there's that desire kind of gets a bad reputation. That we're supposed to get rid of all desire. And then we'll be liberated from suffering, we'll be happy. Which I believe is a pretty big mistranslation. Desire is not the problem. There's nothing wrong with desire. In fact, we're born into a desire unit. A biological sensing unit that desires lots of things. As my friend George would say. And what gets us into trouble actually is not desire, but actual craving. Needing things. So we might say, my friend and teacher Noah Levine would say that desire basically says, I want it, but I'm okay without it. I want it, but if I don't get it, it's okay. Craving says, I want it, and I gotta have it. I need it. And I will not do anything else. I will not pay attention to anything else until I get it, until I have it. And so that's greed, right? And these are, you know, from a lived experience, if we look into our own hearts and minds, we can kind of see, well, what's the difference, right? Is it craving or desire? They're not that. They're quite similar. So meditation is helpful because it allows us to see the difference. Desire, probably the place that it shows up most clearly is in the Buddhist teachings on Buddhist psychology in the Abhidharma, where desire is identified as one of 52 mental factors. And its desire is considered to be ethically neutral, occasional mental factor. Which means that it's occasional. Occasionally we have desire. Sometimes we have desire, sometimes we don't. It occasionally arises. It comes and goes, doesn't it? Comes out of nowhere sometimes. Sometimes we stir it up. But it's just there. It occasionally arises, and it's ethically neutral. That means, by its very nature alone, it has no ethical quality. It's not good, bad, or otherwise. It just is. Ajahn Amaro, who's one of the masters in the Thai forest tradition, who's an English monk, so he speaks English really well. He's been in robes for many, many years. He often says that desire is the natural energy of the human realm. Desire is what dictates everything that we do. And we don't want to get in judgment or shame or guilt or all of this bullshit stuff that we oftentimes put on top of our desire system. It's just what we have. It's just there. Right? Now, when desire becomes hijacked or colored or influenced by greed, it turns into craving. Same and likely with hatred and delusion. And so what happens is our desire system, our ethically neutral desire system, is easily corrupted. Easily corrupted. And so we need to pay attention. We need to be mindful, we need to be heedful, we need to be careful about what happens when our desire system becomes hijacked. And oftentimes what happens is we cause harm. We cause harm to ourselves, we cause harm to others. Because what happens is when craving kind of takes over, desire and craving are actually two different things, and when craving takes over, it puts us in that state of restlessness, doesn't it? Reactivity, anxiety. Craving is actually unpleasant. And the delusion says that the craving is unpleasant, but if you satisfy the craving, it will be pleasant. That's the delusion. So we feel the restlessness, we feel the reactivity, we want or think we need the thing or whatever it is, and instead of cooling it down, we heat it up, and we buy into the delusion that says, no, if you get this, you'll fucking be happy. If you get rid of this, totally be happy. And you'll be happy forever. So do it now. Now, damn it. craving has a sense of urgency to it, doesn't it? I want it now. Immediate gratification. And of course, unfortunately for us, we live in the culture that promises you that you can have it now, and you can charge it, pay us later. Fuck it, 0% financing. You call Best Buy, they'll drop a TV off of your house. Fucking no interest for a first year. You can have it. We'll front it to you. Right? You can get all kinds of shit fronted. And you're like, yeah, that sounds good, man. Fucking gonna get one of those. And so, you know, we see this play out in so many different ways. And so one of the things that we can learn to do, one of the things that can be actually really helpful is actually learning how to pay more attention and having a sense of respect, a sense of conscience, a sense of concern, a sense of care, all of these heart qualities I talk about all the time, about and towards our desire system. Because one of the ways that we suffer, one of the ways that I notice that I've suffered over my desire system is that sometimes I want things that I feel like I shouldn't want. Because I'm a bad person. I shouldn't want that. I shouldn't have this desire. And this is, again, this is actually just hatred. I hate myself for wanting this thing. I work a lot with young people, a lot with teenagers, and in the last several months I've had several conversations with people in their, you know, 13, 14, and realizing that their desire system is for the same sex. You know, people who, you know, the people in the gay community who are just like talking to people and they, you know, remembering the first time they noticed, actually, I like boys. Shit, I'm not supposed to like boys. Or shit, I'm not supposed to like girls. Or shit, I'm not supposed to have this desire because I was told it was wrong or bad. And then, so this is where we start to get caught into this self-hatred, self-judgment, shame, feeling bad about what we want. You know, and this is really difficult. I mean, this is an example that's really, really difficult. But, you know, I think it's important that we have some kind of healthy balance and some kind of discernment and some kind of just honesty, some self-honesty about what our basic needs are, what our desires are, and actually be able to overcome the discomfort of the social judgment or the self-judgment. Because a lot of times having to work with our desires is really uncomfortable. And so what happens is craving comes in and says, dude, you don't need to be uncomfortable. If I don't want to be uncomfortable, just do this. Don't be uncomfortable, just have another cookie. Or whatever, right? So it starts off with something like that, but it can get really, really, really out of hand. And so one of the ways that I like to look at it, one of the ways that I think about it, one of the ways that actually allows us to challenge ourselves and to stand up for ourselves and to really live from that place of our own truth is being able to be uncomfortable with our desires. And also being willing to be uncomfortable when some of our desires aren't being met in a timely fashion. Right? You know, the desire, and usually they're big ones, right? The desire for connection. You know, usually the desires we're looking for is not the fucking Best Buy TV. It's not the car. It's not the worldly shit distractions that we use to fill up the space when our desires aren't met, but it's the desire for connection, for intimacy, for love, for acceptance, for the stuff we ain't even going to talk about that, I'll just go get a TV. Fuck it. You know, and when we start to practice, if you start to practice mindfulness, you start to practice heart practices, and you start to develop a sense of empathy and forgiveness and kindness towards yourself, your heart softens a little bit, and you start to actually become more aware of your desires, which is both wonderful and, for many of us, are very frightening. And sometimes we can get really depressed or really bummed out when we start to see, actually, my desires are not getting met, and they have not been met in many areas for a long fucking time. And I am over that, man. When's shit gonna go my way? When am I gonna fall in love? When am I gonna meet somebody? When am I gonna have someone who cares about me? You know, these really common, basic needs, really. And we're... So on one end, we're not really that skilled at being vulnerable with these experiences and holding them in a way when they're open. And if we're unable to do that, actually, what happens as a flip side is we aren't able to act when there's a moment or a situation in which maybe we could get some of our desires met, because we're afraid. Because it's scary. Because we don't want people to know that we're lonely. We don't want people to know what we want. I have this tendency. I've been working with some of my Against the Stream Dharma teachers. One of my colleagues, George Haas, is really interested and masterful in this thing called attachment theory. I don't know enough about to say it, but I do know that my attachment style is to be dismissive. And so one of my defense mechanisms, one of my strategies is I don't feel like my desires are going to be met, because in many areas they haven't been. So I'll just kind of minimize and be like, oh, I don't want that anyway. I'll dismiss or I'll devalue the thing that I actually want because I'm afraid I might not get it. And then I'm going to be hurt again. So I do this whole, fuck it, I'm not going to try anyway, why bother? Dismissive. And what happens is I keep not getting what I want. Huh. I keep going, how come I don't ever fucking get what I want? Because anytime there's an opportunity for it, I devalue it and say, no, I didn't really want that anyway. Because I don't want to take the risk or take the gamble of the loss. So why, I'm not going to even play the game anyway. And so we all have strategies that actually we think might be good defenses, but a lot of our strategies, a lot of our craving, a lot of our reactivity actually gets in the way of us being able to live in a way that we actually want to. It blocks us from getting in touch with our deeper intentions and being able to feel the vulnerability or the discomfort of that and thing not being met or desire not being met. Maybe we don't even want people to know. I don't want people to know because I don't want people to... One of the problems that I've had, one of the things that... some of the conditioning that I've had is because I've had a lot of loss in my life, is one of my biggest fears is that you're going to take pity on me. And actually, I would take just about... I would rather you hate me than pity me, actually. And so, if I open myself up too far, and I become transparent or vulnerable or whatever, I'm afraid that people will go, oh, that poor son of a bitch. That lonely, miserable Buddhist teacher. That fucking guy. I like hanging out with that guy, but I would not want to fucking be in his experience. So like that fear, you know, my big, that's, yeah, I'll fucking do all kinds of weird shit for that not to happen. And ultimately I end up missing out on opportunities where some of my desires might be able to get met, or some of the connections I might be looking for could happen. You know. And so, working with George is like no fun. Mostly Dharma teachers. Just to let you know, you might want to avoid Dharma teachers because they're full of bad information about how you're living your life. Here's all the ways you're doing it wrong. First of all, you know. But you know, when we start to, you know, look at it this way, one of the things that we want to do is we want to just remember, or we want to incline, or we want to just even consider some of what I'm saying here, and just like the humility to say that I am in a desire system, fucking whether you like it or not. I mean, how many times, how many moments in the day do you find yourself wanting something? Or not wanting something? I mean, that's basically what you do all day, isn't it? That's what I do. I don't want this, I want that, I don't want this, I don't want that, I'm going to drive a different way because there's too much fucking traffic on White Bridge Road now. Do all kinds of insane things to avoid being inconvenienced, physically, mentally, or emotionally. Right? And so I don't even mean to do that. It's not like I get up in the morning and think about how I'm going to do that, but that's how it is, isn't it? For good, bad, or otherwise, that's how it is. And so when we start to feel craving in the system, craving, one of the things about craving, or the term I use is reactivity, because I think maybe we are more familiar with that. We notice that it's not pleasant when you're in it. The promise that the mind is saying, oftentimes, like, no, 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 you should suffer now because you're going to get this thing later and it's all going to go away. This reactivity, this craving, oftentimes postpones our sense of freedom and our ability to be at ease, because we say, I'll be at ease later. First, I'm going to suffer really hard through this. So the sense of being reactive. We notice that it's unpleasant. We notice, how does it feel in the body? The interesting thing about Buddhist psychology and the Abhidharma is, in an unwholesome state of mind, there are certain factors that are in unwholesome mind states. Greed, hatred, and delusion are also mental factors, and they're considered unwholesome mind states. But the mind state that arises in every single mind state that's unwholesome is restlessness, agitation, reactivity. So if you feel that onset, you can know all the other unwholesome factors are about ready to fucking race to the top. It's like greed, hatred, delusion, ill will, jealousy, conceit. It's like, here it comes. They're like, they see restlessness broke down the door of your freedom, and they all gonna get in. So we can notice that the restlessness, the onset of the restlessness, the reactivity, we can maybe notice, okay, pay attention, be heedful, what's happening? Oftentimes, what happens in those moments is, if I can back up, if I can kind of roll the tape back, there's some discomfort about something that I'm, there's maybe some fear about something not going to work out. Usually what happens is, something that I desire, something that I need, something that I want that's probably okay to want, I feel like I'm not going to get it, or I feel like I'm going to lose it. And then the reactivity comes in to try to manage that stress, that dukkha, the Buddha calls it. And so when I'm unable to manage stress, when I'm unable to hold, tolerate, or to meet with empathy and understanding this stress or this dukkha, I start to create reactivity around it. Start to create a sense of restlessness around it. And also, you know, in the recovery world, many times we hear, you know, these two kinds of self-centered fear. the fear that I'm going to lose something that I already have. And if I feel like I'm going to lose something that I already have, I start to get reactive. I start to get kind of cravy, which is my favorite word. Cravy, crazy. Get cravy, crazy. And start thinking up all kinds of insane shit. I'm afraid I'm going to lose something that I already have, or I'm afraid I'm not going to get something that I want. And so for me, this dismissive nature is actually, I am afraid I'm not going to get something that I want. So a lot of times what I'll do is I'll devalue the desire and say, oh, I don't want it anyway, but I actually totally do. It's that delusion. So sometimes that's colored by, you know, like, I want this, but I'm not going to get it anyway. Why bother? Or actually, I don't deserve it. And so this is where we get into that. So to me, this is a form of self-hatred. The idea that I don't deserve something that's a basic need or a basic desire is self-hatred. It's a little bit violent, actually. It is a repression that happens. And it's kind of so tricky because it's like I feel like I'm screwed either way. Like I either become dismissive and devalue the thing and definitely don't get it, but feel a little bit safer because you don't fucking know. Or I open to it, I try to get it, I try to be available for it, and it doesn't happen or it doesn't work out, and then I have to deal with the loss of that. I don't want to do that either. Is there a fucking third option?
Go to bed.
Yeah, exactly. You know, have a fucking drink, man. Had enough of this. And so really, there's actually no third option. Which is why, again, we do not charge for our classes here at Against the School. But ultimately, this third option really becomes, we start to see as we can learn to manage or learn to open to or learn to have more skill sets around sadness and fear and anger and these kinds of emotions, we start to see that actually a lot of times it's not as bad as we might have thought. It's not, especially for me, the big one is sadness. I'll do some weird shit to not feel sad. I can do anger. I'll do anger. I'll do fear. Maybe. Sadness, fucking off the table. Not doing that. And also the ironic thing is that when I do feel sad and I do let myself cry for 2 or 3 minutes, that's actually gone. It metabolizes itself. And 3 minutes later, I'm like, oh, that wasn't so bad. You know, so what's it going to be, you know? And so what happens is, you know, we start to notice, or maybe we would acknowledge that even the Buddha said that, you know, that he calls it this term, this Pali term, Dhammachanda, which is the desire for the Dharma, or the desire for liberation, the desire for freedom, the desire for happiness and well-being, the desire really for an inner sense of peace, safety, ease, is that that's what we should foster. That's what we should feed. That is a wholesome, that is actually the term sometimes he uses is also samvega, which means spiritual urgency, where we really start to live from that place and say, you know what, man? We really kind of take control. We really kind of take charge. You know, we kind of do it anyway. Deal with the discomfort anyway. Because we start to see that we start to see the limitations of the experience that we're in. And we start to see the delusion that we operate from. We start to accept that more. We start to have more, with mindfulness, we start to have more wisdom. We start to see clearly that avoiding unpleasant experiences isn't realistic and it doesn't really provide any happiness anyway. It just gives us a temporary sense of good enough. We start to see through that delusion of the feel-good system. And we start to see that the greed, we start to see that being actually generous and being giving and being friendly and having some renunciation and giving up certain things that we thought we needed actually turns out to be really good for us. There was a show on NPR this morning about that. I don't know how true it is, but it was, you know, basically a scientist talking about that actually they've hooked people up to machines and actually people are more happier when they're giving people stuff. They're actually more happier in their brains when they're being generous than when they win the lottery.
So I was like, well, I want to try that. I want to.
Let me see if I can take that money and see if that's true. But there's something about it, and we notice this too, there's something about being generous, and there's something about helping other people, and there's something about being available for other people that just kind of good old-fashioned feels good. And also probably the easiest one, I think, to abandon, and the easiest thing that we notice that we can let go of, that we can unhook from, is I think most of us can notice relatively quickly that hatred never serves. So usually we find that that's the first one that we can shed. Of greed, hatred, and delusion, I think hatred is the easiest one to give up. Greed's a little harder to give up because there's a sense of, I might get something, kind of want to have it. A little harder. And then delusion's really hard to give up because when we're delusional, we don't know we're delusional because we're delusional. So by very nature, it's cunning. So that's what I wanted to say for this evening. I hope that was